thành công được. So, I'll turn it over to Paula.
Okay, so my name is Paulette, and tonight I'm going to discuss the middle way, finding balance. I do want to be able to share my screen later, so if Soki can help me with that.
I'm working on it now. I got the chat note.
Okay. So I think what I'll do is I'm going to start with a meditation. I know we just came out of meditation, but this one, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to guide you a little bit through this. So it's a meditation for being in the moment. So just go ahead and find a comfortable seat. And if you feel comfortable doing so, you can close your eyes. And feel your sits bones on the cushion or on your seat. Sits bones are like the bony protrusions on either side of your groin. You might feel a slight breeze on your skin. Notice if you notice any pain in your body, like a maybe a dull ache in your shoulder. Notice any sounds around you. You might hear someone in the adjoining room. And then start to notice your thoughts and what's very common is when we sit, it might be different because we just sat for an hour, many of us, but you'll notice that your mind might start to go into the future or into the past. And if you have a presence of mind and you're able to stay in the moment, that's wonderful. But if you're going into the past or into the future, just notice that as well. And then, if you start to become consumed with what happened yesterday, see if you can deepen your breath. Let it go and come back to now. Notice the rise and fall of your belly with your breath. Notice any internal sensations, external sensations. And gently encouraging your mind to come back to this moment here and any sensations that you're feeling in your body. And then the thoughts will come in, they'll intrude. See if you can notice them without becoming enmeshed in them. Kind of like cars on the highway. And you're on the side of the road. And take in a deep breath, expanding the belly, breathing into the lower back. And exhaling. Deep breath, expanding the belly, feeling the chest and the ribs expand, and then exhale. And one more time, deep breath in. Feel the breath throughout the entire torso, and exhale. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. If your eyes are closed. So, when I started thinking about this topic, I needed to do some research because I knew that I needed, you know, the experts to back me up. So I went to Thich Nhat Hanh, I went to Robert Thurman, I went to the FPMT Foundation for the Preservation of Mahayana Tradition. And so I had the question, what is the middle path? What is the middle way? And so when Buddha lived in the palace as Prince Siddhartha, he was surrounded by luxury and sense pleasures and all the comforts he could ever want. And then he saw the four signs of old age, sickness, death, and an ascetic, a monk. And that's what prompted him to want to leave the palace and understand the nature of suffering or the cause of suffering. So he left and pursued extreme abstinence, self-denial, and wanted to become an ascetic. And so he sat in meditation, eating one grain of rice. And he found enlightenment, but he realized that both of those extremes were not the way. And so he started to teach how to avoid both of these extremes. The path of sense pleasure and the path of abstinence. His abstinence caused almost like self-harm. So extreme asceticism and indulgence were not the way, but the middle path was the way. And then he also talked about the Four Noble Truths, that life is suffering. The cause of suffering is craving, clinging, attachment, desire. There is an end to suffering, and the way to end the suffering is through the Eightfold Path. So that was kind of the background of what the Buddha went through to become enlightened. And I started to think also, like last week we talked about mental health, and part of this idea of, you know, the extremes and the middle way is this idea of a lot of times depression is associated with going back to the past and thinking of, you know, maybe having doubts and regret about what happened in the past. And then sometimes anxiety is related to this sense of anxiousness, trepidation about the future, and dread about what's to come. So I started to make the connection that the middle way is being in the moment and being able to rest in the moment between the two extremes. So I continued my research, and I'm going to share with you something that some slides I made. So, I never really went into the Noble Eightfold Path. I heard about it, but I didn't really understand it that well. I mean, I understood it like on a surface level. And so there's eight parts, but they're broken up into three parts. So wisdom, ethical conduct, and mental discipline. And I feel like they all kind of orbit this idea of right understanding or right view, sometimes it's called. And so right understanding is the first one. It's under wisdom, and it's knowledge and seeing someone, something's true nature. And when Jinryu presented her talk, she talked about how nothing has a, I get this right, but separate self. So in some ways, we need to find this right view and right understanding. And I actually had a journey that I went through where I really very much believed that we have a soul, eternal soul. And I held on to it like very doggedly because I thought it was a very poetic idea. I thought it was a very beautiful concept. But I had to come to terms with the fact that that was somewhat of an erroneous viewpoint, and that there's nothing that really continues unchanged from, you know, lifetime to lifetime if you believe in reincarnation. And so I came to terms with my own wrong perception. And and so I think that was kind of a huge transition for me to start to think about things not having a soul, like people, animals. And then, you know, from that, from clarifying your perception comes right thought. And then comes from that, the seed comes ethical conduct, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Because everything is coming from the perception, right? It starts into, as a perception, and then in, as a thought, and then as an action, a speech, as maybe even a way of life. And then the last section, the mental discipline, I see that as almost a reflective process. So becoming aware of what our minds are doing and the effort to prevent unwholesome states from arising. And right mindfulness, being aware of what our minds are doing. You know, when we're seeing, we're perceiving things as unpleasant or events as unpleasant or pleasant or even neutral. Because there's a certain clinging to that. When we say we like something, we're clinging to that idea. When we say we don't like it, we're pushing it away, it's attachment and aversion. So just becoming aware when we're doing that on a mental level. And then right concentration is disciplining and training the mind to become aware of how we're perceiving things and how we might be misperceiving things. And during my research, one of the, like if there was a thesis to my talk, it would be that, and this is Thich Nhat Hanh, that the most important practice of Buddhist meditation is to look deeply at our wrong perceptions, ideas, and notions that are the basis of suffering. So if we were to really find like a middle way, so to speak, it would be to look deeply at how we're misperceiving ourselves, each other, events. And that brought me to, and this is getting a little bit heady, so if anybody has any questions, feel free to let me know. But I never looked at this before, and this was kind of all new to me, and maybe some of you have experience with this already, but these 12 links of dependent co-arising, and they're also very cyclic, so it's not like they go in a line. Like just like all the Eightfold Path is connected, this is all connected. But I do feel like it starts with ignorance. So this idea that we don't see things clearly, we don't see events clearly, we don't see ourselves clearly, we don't see that we actually don't exist independently, that we are dependent on each other, and that everything is dependent on something else to exist. Like, for example, a simple example would be the sun. Like the sun exists, but we wouldn't really understand what it means to be sunny if there weren't non-sun elements. And that's very Thich Nhat Hanh. But like the idea that if we didn't have rain or cloudiness or other elements besides the sun, we would not have any conception of what it means for something to be, for there to be a sunny day. And often when we think about things, we don't think about their, you know, the elements and the causes and the conditions that create it. And anybody who's read Thich Nhat Hanh, and even if you haven't, he talks a lot about, I'll just explain, you know, how a piece of paper comes into being. You need the logger, you need the sunshine, you need the cloud, you need the paper mill, you need all the components that brought that paper into being. So the paper cannot exist independently. And in some ways, these causes and conditions had to be just ripe enough for the paper to come into being. So the best practice we do is what we do every time we're together, which is we sit and we meditate and often probably look at our thoughts. And the best thing we can do is try to understand our thoughts and where they're coming from. So, like, if I have a response to something, it might be habitual. It might be a habitual response. Like, if I get mad at somebody who cuts me off on the road, it's like I've gotten mad because of that before, and maybe many, many times in the past. So it's becoming a habit. And something that's more neutral is like every time we get in the car, we don't have to think about it. We know how to drive, right? Most of us. So it's like it's a habitual action. So we don't really think about what it takes, you know, to drive, but we just kind of get in the driver's seat and go. So it starts with this idea of we don't see things clearly. And I don't mean to like insult anybody, but this is just one of the 12 links of dependent co-arising. And then from that comes this unconscious behavior, right? From our false perception, our flawed perception, our not seeing things clearly, it leads to unconscious behavior. And then that leads to conscious behavior. So it comes into fruition. So false perception leads to seeds of action. And then there's Namarupa, which is the fourth one, which is mind and body, mental and physical. And it gets very, very subtle. But this idea of how something comes into being. So it starts with this false perception, then unconscious behavior and conditioning, then coming into fruition in our actions and our mental and physical perceptions. Our six senses can also color our perception. How our senses interact with the outer world, with this, which is Sparsha. And then Vedana, which is how our senses then lead to, you know, desire, aversion, clinging, craving, desire, attachment, grasping, and then finally becoming. And so this, you know, all of these have to do with the fact that one depends on the other, right? It's kind of a cycle. And then even birth and death, you know, this gets a little, but even birth and death is not, it's kind of a misperception because nothing's really born and nothing really dies. And like Thich Nhat Hanh will give the example of, you know, even when you're born, you're not really born. You are in your parents' DNA and you were in your, you know, your, there was an essence of you and your ancestors, etc. So, sorry, my cat. So I know this is a little dense, and I actually would love to do some more research on it, but I came across it and I found it fascinating, and I wanted to share it with you. And I really love this idea that nothing is born and nothing dies, because when I think about that, that makes a lot of sense. It might change, you know, but I mean, it continues in some way. So, you know, even though I've lost the idea of the soul, I still have this idea of consciousness and that it persists and that it might even, you know, there is a concept of reincarnation and we can continue. Maybe we're not people again, maybe we're a tree or maybe we're a flower or maybe we're a bird, but there's a continuity there. And I think there's something very beautiful about that idea. Because not only does that mean that we continue, but it also creates this premise that we are connected. You know, I am here and you are there, but we're connected. And I just find that absolutely beautiful. And then this was another thing I found, which I thought was just interesting. There was this was on the FPMT website, and it was created by a monk, so I think there's some value to it. But what causes suffering is ignorance, compounding factors, which would also be unconscious actions, and consciousness. Actualizing causes are craving, grasping, and existence, and then the results. And name and form is just an old-fashioned way of saying mind and body. The sixth sense sphere, so the six senses, contact, feeling, birth, and death. So I don't know if this is getting too, you know, cerebral, but the idea, I think this is a very intelligent group. So like this idea that it's cyclic, like you die and then the ignorance starts again, depending on how much work you did to, you know, to rid yourself of that ignorance or that misperception. So, so you know, I am still on this journey of trying to understand what the middle path is. I think it's a noble journey. And the reason I wanted to talk about this was because I have been searching for this middle way for as long as I've had conscious thought, I think. To be able to understand my mind, to understand my motivations, to understand why I do the things I do and what kind of causes karma and what causes suffering. Because even though the first noble truth is life is suffering, you know, the beauty is that there's a way out. And, you know, working towards finding a way out. So, like, even just today, I had an interview and I didn't get the link. And I kept thinking, oh my God, they forgot that I have a meeting with them, or they already hired somebody else, or I lost it. I can't find it. Or, you know, and my mind started going into this rabbit hole and it downward spiral. And I finally got the link and I had my interview, in case you're wondering. But it was interesting to watch how quickly my mind just deteriorated into this spiral. And, you know, I think when those things happen, it's good to sit with it and see what the bigger picture is. So, you know, and without being too personal, I think the outcome was that I started realizing, you know, in some ways that even from childhood, I felt a certain like invisibility and not being seen and not being acknowledged or noticed. So I could see the seed of that panic and where it was coming from, which I think takes a lot of presence of mind. It takes courage. It takes willingness to look at it because it's not pleasant. But looking at the seed of when my mind starts doing these things, like starts spiraling out of control. And I mean, I look at events in the world too. It's, I've been watching the January 6th trial. And, as much as it's interesting and disturbing, it's like it's not just one person, it's a culmination of causes and conditions, right? It's a combination of lot of factors. So it's not like this just was born and out of nowhere. It's like it's kind of like there's a lot of different sides to it. So, what I would like to do, and I didn't tell this to Ishisuke or anybody that's running this, but it would be, I think, worthwhile for us to get into small groups and to discuss some time that you've had a misperception about something and how it played out for you. It could be similar to what I explained with this interview. It could be something, not quite the same. It could be something actually, maybe even, like sometimes also it's interesting the way my mind works, and I don't know if anybody else's mind works like this, but it's like it goes from dread to lots of hope, and like back to dread, and then hope. And so it's like it's almost like these two dichotomies. So, how do you navigate that? Anyway, before we go any further, does anybody have any questions or want to like review anything? Because I know I've given a lot of information. Does anybody have any questions? I can wait a really long time because I'm a teacher.
I just wanted to say that part of the reason why I'm on this meeting is because I botched an interview and I felt really bummed about it and I didn't know what to do. And so you just like sharing that experience is like helped me a little bit because like what can you do when there's nothing to do? You can do nothing and you can like watch yourself and see what's happening. So I don't know. I just thought that was a crazy coincidence and I appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks, Charles. I know I gave you a tough one to, it's like, how do I answer this? But or I know I gave you a lot of information, so if anybody wants to go back to the slides, let me know. And I maybe some of you know more about this idea of dependent origination, but I just find it fascinating because the idea that we are connected is just very, whether or not it's totally true, is that there's something very comforting in that idea. And I don't know if I'm just doing things to make myself feel better, but the idea that we can't exist really without each other is almost as poetic as having a soul. Vin?
Have to unmute myself. I had found it your presentation interesting. I was I have a little difficulty with nothing is born and nothing dies, except on the, I realize matter cannot be created or destroyed, except energy matter cannot be created or destroyed, but it changes form. But the form is born or it is die, it does die, at least as I perceive it. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one for me to wrap my head around.
Me too. And I think what I can appreciate about this, and again, I mean, I have a lot to learn about it, but that it might die in the way that we understand it, mm-hmm. but it's on another form.
Yeah.
I'm holding on doggedly to this idea of reincarnation because that's all I got left. I've lost the idea of the soul, so.
Yeah, I have too. When I was much younger, maybe not that much younger, but when I was younger, I held on to that idea too. But then it was actually in some ways more peaceful for me to think that that there isn't really a soul, that there's, you come together as these elements of your background and your karma, and then that ends, and you know, maybe something continues, but not a conscious soul. You know, I don't believe that you, I think it highly unlikely that people actually remember past lives, because in part because nobody ever remembers being a peasant.
Thank you, Ben. Jeff.
Thank you very much, Paulette, for your presentation. I really enjoyed that. Your very last comment about drawing some comfort, perhaps you said, from knowing that we're all connected. Do you derive some of that sense from what you reviewed in that middle way, or that those 12 factors of causation? Could you talk a little bit about the connection back to that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I kept searching in vain for examples of this dependent origination. And, you know, I was coming up a little bit short, but you know, I don't like to talk about things in dichotomies, but it's the easiest way to get the idea across. And so whenever I think of anything, and I, you know, I don't mean to be nihilistic, but whenever I think of anything, I think of it in terms of its opposite. You know, so like happiness and sadness, life and death, you know, love and hate. It just, it's like you, with one, you can't have it without its counterpart, because there would be nothing to define it. It's almost like they're defined in juxtaposition to each other. And in that way, they rely on each other to exist. And there's so many stories in the Buddhist texts about, you know, Buddha cannot exist without Mara, you know, the demon, and the two of them need to coexist in order for them to continue. And it's upsetting because, you know, that at one point I wish that we could have, you know, a world without war and a world without hate and a world without prejudice and a world without racism and a world, but it's almost like in some ways we need some of those dark parts in order for the good to exist. It's like, and not to make this sound like, you know, the Avengers or something, but like the idea that you, in, you know, in contrast, they define each other. And in some, in that way, they rely upon each other and they depend on each other. Something that I read that kind of blew my mind too, and I don't know how well this relates, but is that we have a perception of ourselves, but everyone we know has a different perception of our perception of ourselves. And that is their perception. Mine is not particularly right. Theirs is not right. They all kind of rely on each other to form who I am. If there is an I. But, you know, the idea that a lot of the research also said that there's no one right perception, which threw me for a loop, because we're, you know, there's this idea of correcting perception. Then how do you do that if there's no one right perception? But there's a, I guess there's a right perception in the collection of all those elements together, like dependent origination, they all depend on each other. Those 12 steps or parts, you know, the Eightfold Path, they're all dependent on each other. You know, it's very, very difficult for me to find something in this world that is not, that exists without its opposite. That makes sense. Thank you. Yeah, Jinryu.
Got it. How's it? I love what you have said, and I admire your poise. I mean, it's amazing to me. You know, I came here, from a 12-step tradition, and then, of course, my familial Christian background. So I had concepts in my head about a higher power, if you want to call it that, which in the handful of years that I have been here has changed significantly. It's gotten much more ethereal, much more indescribable. And I am much more comfortable with that, which is kind of amazing to me. But I am very comfortable with this inability to describe, and yet I know it's out there. And I definitely feel it in here more than I've ever felt. And so I found the teaching around, I can't remember what the original talk was, but you've mentioned it, but this idea that we don't have a soul. There is no Atma, because that was clearly being taught at the time that the Buddha came up with this.
Totally.
So it's radical. It's radical thinking. Mm-hmm. And I found it jarring. But over time, two things have happened. First of all, my practice, as well as a very particular session at Great Vow that focuses on death, has made me very comfortable with the idea of death as being part of this process. It's not the end. It's just you just turn a page. At least that's the way I think of it now. And the other thing is, what does it matter if I have a soul or not? Because I'm going to be dead and I'm not going to know. But what I do know, I have a Buddha nature. And I love it. And I think part of my practice involves really becoming familiar with that. as the result of the talk that I did and all the things I looked at, I am convinced more than ever that everyone and everything has a Buddha nature. I'm convinced. Can't tell you how I became convinced, but I just know that I am. Anyway, I just love this discussion. And I love what you've just brought forth. It's great.
Thank you, Jinryu. I think too, I could say that if you think I presented with poise, it was because all of you on this call right now have enabled that. Like in some ways, all of us have poise because I'm able to do, you know, say what I'm saying and talk about the things I'm talking because of the causes and the conditions and the interconnectedness of this group. So, you know, it's almost like I've heard people say, you know, oh, you're so beautiful. Well, it's because you're beautiful and you're bringing that out in me. You know, so it's like this idea of the interconnectedness. You know, when you see things in other people, it's that what you have in yourself. So I was actually thinking of a breakout groups, but I don't think so. I think we'll just stay together. But if anybody wants to share a time where they had a misperception, I would welcome it because I think that many people could probably, I don't want to speak for everybody, but could probably relate.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
So I'm not going to share a time that I had a misperception, only because when you first mentioned that, it kind of came back, it came as a flood. I can't think of a time in my life where I wasn't abiding in an abundance of misperceptions. So to try and isolate just one is almost impossible. So I just want to say I could do that. I could start reciting from the present and working backwards, but it would literally take me another 50 years to recite them all.
I guess I'll share something.
Go ahead, Melissa. Oh, you're muted.
Okay, in the, can you hear me now? Yeah? Okay, in the aligned with the birth and death conversation is one of the things that also helped me move and understand that a lot better too is I was at a Deepak Chopra event with Deepak, and at one point during the weekend he put a huge screen, he had a huge movie screen on the stage, and he said to us, "How did you get here?" And suddenly the black screen became lit up and there were sperm going across the screen and an egg. and he showed the whole evolution of going from when they first meet to a zygote to an embryo to a, you know, being an infant being born and such. And his way of presenting that was so fabulous for me because I felt like, you know, oh my gosh, I mean, at one point we could say a zygote was birthed, born, or and then from the an embryo was born, you know, and it really helped me to see in perspective how we are just always this continuation of change and change form and also on a deeper level I came to understand how just the how important the allowing and just being present is, and how, you know, we're not in the womb going, oh my God, I have to grow my fingers now. Oh, it's too late. I need to hurry up and grow my fingers, or my ears haven't formed yet, or, you know, any of that. It just is a beautiful, natural, evolving experience. So I think that helped me quite a bit, just hearing that, and to feel like, you know, what is born, what is dying, when? We're always, you know, being birthing new things, and things are dying. We have friends come in our life, we have friends leave, we have new jobs, we have new places to live and places we leave. And it's like there's so many births and deaths going on all the time, and so many subtle ways, you know, and yeah, anyway, like that was just a fun depth experience for me, took it to another level.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about death, these two concepts of nothing is permanent and that there's no birth or death. And if we understood that, then we wouldn't have as much suffering. But it's one thing to say that, and it's another thing to go through that. Because yeah. I think we all understand, most of us understand the pain of losing something or someone, and it is real. But maybe it would be less painful if we understood the nature of reality, which is that we're not losing that person or animal or whatever passed. They just are transitioning. I remember in one of my more lucid moments, I just was like in a meditation and I was thinking about death, and I said, it's just a transition. It's a transition. And sure, it's a transition, but you know, it's easier said than done. I don't want to minimize, you know, like anyone's losses, but maybe it could reduce just a little bit of suffering if we understood, you know, that there is no birth and death, and that that change is the only constant. You know, because I honestly hate change, and yet it's the only constant. And I fight it with every fiber of my being, but it has to happen. It's part of life.
I think also when there is lots of change, my experience is I think it's a little bit the opposite. I'm so good with change. I have more of a hard time with having things be the regularly scheduled events be the same. Same. But I'm seeing, as I look at both of them, the in changing a lot, you see what remains the same within the perception, who the witness who's looking. And then vice versa in not changing and staying in a path for a long time or a certain place, you can also view change. It's like you said before, just different perceptions of it. Yeah.
Thank you.
One thing that I was like thinking about with like an example of a misperception leading to like actions, and then like, you know, I forget the exact verbiage, but like non-physical things, you know, like, I guess for lack of better terms, like vibes, you know, kind of throwing things off in the energy between people. Was my brother was in a breakup with his longtime girlfriend, and he was all sad, and he was moving some things out. And I remember him talking to my mom, and my mom asking him, and saying like, well, do you want to break up with her? And he was like, well, no. And then she was like, well, then why are you acting like you are breaking up? Like, act like you aren't breaking up. And then, you know, like that will give you a better shot at like not actually doing so. And so he started acting like they're still together, you know, and they weren't breaking up and they're still together to this day. And I think like, you know, and then to your point, like the temporary nature of everything, I think that like helps with relationships, you know, on one part, not feel so extremely bad when they go sour, but also not feel so like anxious that like things can go wrong when they're going well. And yeah, that was just like one thing where it's like a misperception leads to like actions that he was doing, which led to like, you know, more metaphysical, like communication, like nonverbal stuff that they're doing with each other, and just fixing that misperception kind of mended everything back together.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, there was something else I came across in that dependent origination stuff that was interesting, this idea of the mind and body. And one of the examples that you just reminded me of is that when we do something, like for example, if I were to get mad at someone, it doesn't end after the anger. It resonates in the body and it sort of habitates the body. And it starts to create habitual, it can start to create habitual responses. So I thought that was very interesting, because this idea that we, you know, when we do something, whether good or bad, it resonates on some kind of almost atomic level in the body after the event has transpired. Anyway, if anyone wants to share what they know about dependent origination, I would love to hear it, because honestly, this was my, I got this topic and then I just started doing the research and it took me in all these different directions. So if you have some knowledge that you would like to share with the group, feel free to do that. So something else that I came across was that idea that wrong perception is often at the heart of afflictive emotions, fear, anger, discrimination, and despair. So it's worth kind of exploring those wrong perceptions. And then just to get back to the main idea, because we have 2 minutes, because there's a lot of information just floating around in the ether. That the most important Buddhist practice is looking deeply at our ways of perceiving ideas and notions that often are the basis of our suffering. Alice, did you want to say something?
Hard to do. I know that button just likes to keep clicking. Hi. I love this talk about karma and like everything happening all at once in this wave of Everything starts somewhere, doesn't end here, keeps going. I love things that are like a lot more distilled. Maybe it's because I'm not a detail-oriented person. I mean, I love the list that you presented, but then my brain always goes, yeah, but what's the basics? And I've been reading about anicca, anatta, and dukkha, impermanence, non-self, and suffering. And I really resonate with those three things. Impermanence, because the root of all suffering is when you think that something is permanent, such as, and I mean, again, not to minimize anyone's loss here, but let's just say, and I read this from, I take this from this monk named Bhante-ji. He was like this monk for this, I think, North Carolina or South Carolina monastery. But he says that he was asked a question, should you feel very sad if a family member or a loved one died? And surprisingly, in his answer, he says, it's normal to feel mournful that you cannot see them again. But no, you should not feel sad. And which is a very surprising thing. And they said, well, why? And he said, because you're grasping onto something that they were, which doesn't exist anymore. And it kind of struck an arrow with me, because I realized that a lot of things that make me sad and angry is basically me grasping on something that is inherently empty in the first place. And that's where anatta comes in. So they're all bound together. And that's, they're all bound together. Eightfold Path, the Four Truths, anicca, anatta, and dukkha. So just wanted to add that there. Thank you again.
Thank you, Alice. Yeah, it definitely is, I think, in some ways easier said than done, though. Okay, it's 9:02. We offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you very much.